And I'll say, Heather, it's really great to have Dave and Claire here. So I'm going to ask them to join me up here. So let's have a round of applause for Dave and Claire as they come up. I'll just get you your microphone. Great. Well, you're very welcome here, folks. You've been looking forward to coming up here for weeks on end, so it's great that you're finally here. Claire, tell us what an average week in the Castles household looks like. Where is the Castles household?
Well, it's in Ballyhalbert, if anybody's ever heard of that place.
Great.
Down the peninsula. And there's the two of us and we have two dogs, which are really like our kids because we baby them a bit. But
and what are they called?
Bruno and Pupsy.
Bruno and Pupsy. Lovely.
So the average week, well, we get up early. We get up about 6:45, walk the dogs, and then I work full-time as a nurse. So Monday's my half day, and I spend it with my granny. And the rest of the week, I work a bit longer hours just to have the half day off. And then Dave is at the college, as you know. So a week for him looks Monday to Thursday. He is
lots
driving.
Lots of coffees.
Lots of coffees. And
so what college is he at, or...? Tell us a little bit about that.
The Baptist College, Irish Baptist College.
That's great.
So it's up in Moira, so he travels up there every day, Monday to Thursday. Friday and Saturday he has off to study. So it's been a bit of a conflict because I love cleaning, and he now says I can't clean because he needs quietness to study.
Well, Claire, you can always call round and clean our house if you want. And anyone, you're always welcome to call round and clean our house. You haven't always worked as a nurse, Claire. Rumour has it you were the youngest ever DUP councillor in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, that's something I can tend to keep quiet.
That's quite an achievement. Let's rewind the clock to whenever you were growing up. Tell us a little bit about your family. And then coming to faith, and then up until the point that you entered into your nursing career?
Well, growing up, I was brought up in a Christian home, two parents who loved God, and I think everybody always says that, you know, they're blessed. And it is true, though, when you think about it, they actually had a love and a concern for our souls. And I suppose that's the greatest, you know, privilege, really. So I was brought up there, three brothers.
So you were the
oldest.
Only
girl.
And the female, so.
And I was picked on a bit.
Rumour has it that you ruled that house, Claire.
I did not. I wish I did.
The inside track here.
No, I did not.
Of what Claire said happened.
In fact, my brothers actually at one stage wrapped me up in masking tape and left me on the living room floor. So. But
And here's a photo.
No.
We don't have that. Although I would love to have that photo.
I was before Facebook. But no, we great crack growing up. I mean, and really good relationship, really good family. And Mum and Dad did devotions with us every day. And it was at one of those devotions, actually, just before I was four, that I gave my life to God. And so for me, I suppose, looking back, it was weird, because I can't really remember what having my old nature was like. Ever since that age, I've always known God in my life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm so thankful for that. And obviously I struggle with sin, and there's temptation still there. But, you know, and the other thing when I was thinking about giving this tonight, I was thinking that even though I was only young, that I was still as far from God as anybody else, because we're all born in sin. So there's not a level of closeness or a level of badness. You're either going to heaven or you're not. And I suppose it's just a realisation of that. And it's amazing that any of us have a testimony and that any of us are saved.
Great.
So, and then after that, I was brought up in the church in Sunday school, and had some really fond memories and great mentors through that period of my life, through Bible school teachers and youth leaders. And I think it's only now, looking back, that I appreciate the time that they invested into giving of themselves, and sacrificially at times, to for God, really.
Yeah.
And then through school. So really life seemed, looking back now, quite easy. Went to school, studied nursing. I wanted to be a nurse since I was four. Or
right.
Five. And that's where I ended up going into.
So how on earth did you end up as a DUP counsellor at 12 years old or however old you were?
I think that was a moment of insanity, to be honest. Somebody thought it would be a good idea that I stood, and I did. And I look back with mixed feelings. I was very naive, and I think I went in thinking you want the world to be a better place and everybody's lovely and everybody has that desire. And I think it can make you a bit cynical. And I did really enjoy it, and I learned a lot through it. And I do think there is a need for Christians in government, certainly, and especially in this day and age, but it's just not for me.
So can we rule you out of the DUP leadership?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
I think we're safe enough.
Great. Dave, you also grew up in a Christian family.
I did.
Tell us a little bit about life before Clare.
Life before Clare.
BC.
It was so long ago.
Before Clare.
You had
hair.
Yes, I did have hair. I was also brought up in a Christian home. My dad is a Baptist pastor in Chelmsford in Essex. I had very similar upbringing to Clare in that we did devotions as a family every day, went to Sunday school, went to church. And as a youth, I think, you know, I never gave my life to the Lord as a child, but I went along. But through time, I kind of started to resent church. I hated it. I felt as if I was missing out on something else in life while I was at church. And when I went to high school, I kind of started to rebel. Like I started taking drugs at the age of about 11 or 12 years old, just after starting high school. And from there, I really went away from church altogether. I stopped attending in mind, probably about that age. And at the age of 16, I stopped going altogether. But during that time, when I was probably, I think I was 14, and I got expelled from school. And that summer, we were on holiday in the US. And a good friend of my dad's found out about the school situation and offered me a place at a school, a Christian school in Dublin, in New Hampshire. So a couple of months later, that was me packed and away to America to stay for, well, presumably the rest of my school career. But 7 months in there, I got expelled from that school and sent home again. And that continued. I was expelled again when I got home to Scotland, and my school career was finished by the time I was 15. I was left school, no qualifications, and I was going down a real slippery slope into drink, drugs, and everything that came along with it. I spent all my weekends under the influence of one thing or another, and life just kind of spiraled out of control. Like, I started getting arrested fairly regularly. Mum and dad were getting knocks on the door at 2 or 3 in the morning to say that I was in a police cell somewhere and they'd have to come and collect me in the morning, etc. And I don't know what the problem... I know I was rebelling against God. I never doubted that God existed through this whole period of my life. I always knew that there was a God, but I didn't want to surrender myself to have to live a life that was out with my control. I wanted to control my life. I could build my own happiness. That happiness was in the bottom of a bottle or in a tablet or whatever else. So that was the journey I was on at that point. I worked as a landscaper through most of this time, but kept on. I lost a lot of jobs through the things I was doing outside of work. How far do you want me to go here?
Keep going. Yeah.
As I say, I mean, life was just the next hit. You know, I wasn't really caring about anything else. I didn't care for my parents. I'd run away from home by the time I was 16. I was very rarely at home, right up until the age of 23, 24, when one summer I decided I would go to a Christian Bible conference.
Right.
Which is a bit strange for somebody in my situation at the time. But my whole family, it was the only time of the year my family were in one place at the one time. I had a lot of nieces and nephews at this point. My sister has 9 children. So it's difficult to get to see all of them. So I went along to this Bible conference, and there was a group of young Christians from Northern Ireland there that year, and I spent a little bit of time with them in the evenings, and sort of thought, these guys are actually having fun. You know, I thought Christians were really boring people and they weren't allowed to laugh and have fun and play games and stuff. So I spent a bit of time with these guys and they invited me to London with them. They were going to London for the weekend after the conference. And for whatever reason, I don't know why I went. I think I even thought I was a bit mad going with them at the time myself. But I went along to London, and on the Saturday night, one of the girls in the group took time out to sit with me and tell me that I needed a saviour, that I was on a road that could only lead to one place, and that was an eternity in hell. And I was like, why is she even wasting her time talking to me? You know, like, but I felt convicted that night. I think I was actually in tears, and I was like, no, I can't change. You know, I need to go back home and get back into what I do. But stayed with me. She'd actually said to me that night, you could walk out the door tomorrow morning and get hit by a bus, and you wouldn't have an opportunity. That's it. It's the end. There's no second chances. And I went home with this in my mind, making sure to get the train and not the bus. And I travelled back to Glasgow that day, but everything was different. You know, I was very into very worldly things. Like, I always had my music on, pumping. It was always gangster rap music, stuff that, on that vein, when that stuff was coming in, that's what was coming back out again. Yeah. That's the life I lived. I was probably what people in Scotland would call a Ned. I don't know, you don't have Neds here, you just have Steeks.
Yeah.
But Ned is short for non-educated delinquent, which is what I would have been
tagged as. We have a few of those over here.
Oh, you've got plenty of them over here. I've met a few.
There is one in our front row as well.
I didn't want to look that way. But yeah, so I went home, and the next morning I was going to put some music on, and I lifted out my CDs. We actually had CDs when I was young, not that old. And I couldn't find anything I could listen to. You know, I put something on, I was like, I can't listen to that. You know, it's just, it didn't feel right. And the only other music I had was this cassette tape from the school that I went to in the US, which was all the school students singing hymns. So randomly, I managed to find a cassette player, and I put this tape on, and there was the hymn, I Stand Amazed in the Presence, came on, and I was listening to that second verse where it goes, for me it was in the garden, he prayed not my will but thine, he had no tears for his own grief, but sweat drops of blood for mine. And at that moment, I broke down, and I just knew that I had to surrender my life to God. And at that moment, that's when I made that decision to become a Christian. But unbeknownst to me at that moment in time, that girl and a group of her friends had felt a real burden to pray for me, knowing that I was under conviction. And so they were praying for me over here in Northern Ireland and Scotland. I surrendered my life to the Lord. And on that, now I'm married to that girl who took the time out to witness to me that night. So.
Hold on while I throw up over on the side of the sofa.
Not that that's a good reason to witness to people so that you can marry them. Don't go out looking for good looking unsaved people.
Flirt to convert.
Yeah.
Is that what they say? So you have talked of conversion, and Claire's about how she was saved at a young age. Just thrash out, you know, what is a conversion? What is it to be saved? What is a Christian in very simple terms?
Simple terms is all I can really deal with, Keith. But I think when I first became a Christian, my idea of being a Christian was coming to church on a Sunday, maybe going to the odd prayer meeting, and maybe reading my daily devotional every day. But it took me a long, long time. You know, I was probably saved for about 6 years or so before I really started to grow as a Christian. And that's because that I wasn't building a relationship with God. So to me, being a Christian is having a relationship, which is spending time in prayer, reading scriptures, and really getting to know God and to be an imitator of him, but to follow Christ. It's like he said to the disciples in Matthew, you know, follow me and I will make you fishers of men, and that's his intention for us, and that's what it means to me to be a Christian.
Super. Claire, we'll go back to you. You had obviously set your eyes on Dave, and you obviously had a great influence on his life, and then you began a dealing, and I'm sure life seemed to be going great, and then one evening everything changed. Tell us a little bit about that evening.
Well, it just was like a normal day, like any other day, and everybody was just off in the house doing whatever they went to work, school. My brother next to me was married, and he was out. He had a baby, and they were living in East Belfast, but the three of us were at home. So I came in that night, and it's just funny the things you remember about it, but I came in that night and went for a run, actually, and Mum had said to me, look, Craig's not in yet. Well, you know, but we weren't overly concerned or anything, and we just went on. Mum and I went on and had tea, and he still wasn't home, and he hadn't texted back, which wasn't like him, and his girlfriend hadn't heard from him, and she'd been texting him back and forward, and she didn't hear back from him. And then it was a night of a lot of trouble in Belfast, and the phone lines were down, and there was a lot of traffic, so we thought, it's just been, you know, something like that, and he'll come home, he'll be a bit late. But as time passed, we got a bit more worried, and his girlfriend came down to the house, and we tried phoning the guy he was travelling with, who was his friend but also his boss. He worked in Portadown in a shop for you up there, and they travelled together, and no answer from his wife. And then we, Mum and I were, for some reason, there was just an unease within us, and we started to think maybe he's been in some sort of accident. And we actually started to phone around the hospitals and the police stations just to see if anybody had any word and just to say about it. And actually, Mum got through the Royal, and they said, yes, we've got Craig Ennis here, and put this guy on the phone. And Mum said, oh, thank goodness he's safe, you know, that's great. And then the guy came on the phone, and when Mum was talking to him, she realised suddenly it was a mix-up in the name, and it was Craig Evans that was on the phone, and not. So there was that, like, sort of false sense of hope at one stage. And then Lisburn Police Station phoned us back and asked what Craig was wearing, which we did think was strange, and I think we had a bit of unease at that stage of the night. And then I don't know how long it was after that, but his girlfriend was there, Mum and Dad and I were there, and Dave had come down. We were dating at the time. And we heard a car pull up outside, and I just remember my dad going out, you know, to see, obviously with just anxiety and everything, and there was a guy in plain clothes got out, and I was watching out the window, and I just saw him extend his hand, and Dad broke down, and I knew that the news wasn't good. And he came in, and I can't even remember what was said, but my brother had been killed in a car accident on the way home from work, and doesn't really matter, the circumstances, but there was a guy, he had come out of a side road and hit the side of his car and pushed him into oncoming traffic, and a Jeep then hit again, and the guy had taken off from the scene, and there was a police call out for it, but they'd worked on Craig, and he was pronounced dead at the scene. So that basically changed everybody's life forever.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure that changed everybody's life in the Ennis household. All of his friends would have been changed as well, and the ripple of that went right across the country, really, as that hit into friends in various situations. And something that we probably think we'll never have to deal with, and it'll never happen to us, it'll happen to others, and we hear it happening to others. But then share with us just a little bit, Claire, of how did this hit your faith in God? So you were at four, you came to faith in God, and now tragedy has hit. Tell us a little bit about, did it push you away from God or draw you closer? And how did it influence you and your family?
Well, it's funny when something like that hits, because there's no blueprint really for grief. You know, there's no right or wrong way. You don't know. Everything's just turned upside down. And I think unless you've been through it, it's really hard to describe the feelings. But it just, like, they're overwhelming. Like, really despair and just despondency. And just, I think it's a state of that you can't believe you're never going to see that person again, mixed with, I just got wrenched, and I still get, sometimes I talk about it, the same feeling in my stomach that I got that night that I heard. And I suppose, you know, I had a really good head knowledge, and I knew, and I'd been taught that God was good, and that he's love, and that he's sovereign, and he's in control of everything. And I said that to people, and my work friends were saying, how can you believe there's a God? You know, my work colleagues, that God's not fair. Craig was a good person. How can this happen? And I suppose then I did examine myself, and I thought, you know, I do have this head knowledge that God is good. But this is putting it to the test, really. When something like that happens, do I believe it? Can I say with all my heart that God is good and that he is sovereign and in control? And on examining it, yes, I can, and I can say so much more. And like, his ways are perfect, and we don't understand them always, but his grace is sufficient, and he does get us through these things. And at the initial time, I have to say that the love and friend support from Christian friends, when actions speak louder than words, you know, there are no words that can speak into that circumstance to make it different, or to change it, or to bring Craig back. And it was them and friends showed up with, you know, love and care and concern, and like did the practical things, like baked casseroles, did mum's ironing, all those things that also spoke, you know, comfort into that situation. But it is good to be able to say, obviously, that God is sovereign and his grace is sufficient. And I was reading that hymn, It Is Well With My Soul, where the man lost four of his daughters at sea, and he then was able to pen those words. And on reading that, it says, it has taught me to say, it is well with my soul. So people did, it is a teaching process, I do think, and I think that you can have the head knowledge, and you think, when I hit a circumstance in life, I'm going to be fine, and God's on my side. And it's easy to say that when things are going well, but it's when your faith is tested that show that God really pulls through. But It Is Well With My Soul. The guy that wrote that lost his four children and was able to pen those words, It Is Well With My Soul. And I think the hope, people say, like, how do you have hope in a situation like that? And what is your hope? And for me, it's looking up and not looking to our circumstance. You know, it's looking at God. And God loved us so much that he sent his only son to die and suffer so much, and such an agonizing death in our place, so that we could have a way into heaven. And for me, focusing on that and God's love for us, we have hope. And we don't sorrow as others who have no hope, because we have Jesus, and we know that. I love that verse, and it says, weeping may last for a night, but joy comes in the morning. And weeping sometimes can last, it can be this lifetime, but in the morning we have the hope. You know, I will see Craig again, and he's rejoicing in heaven. Would I want him back here to suffer and to go through the pain and the ups and downs of life? The selfish human part of me, yes, I'd love to see him again, but do you know, we're so much better off. And I'm just so thankful to God that I'm saved and my family are saved, and that we have that hope, and we don't sorrow, and we will see him again, and we can rejoice in that. And I always think, sometimes as a Christian, you think life's going to be rosy, and that you want life as a Christian just to, like, you know, go swimmingly perfect, all tick all the wee boxes, and then land before God, die in your sleep, type thing, and appear. But it is full of struggles, and we are not promised that. We're promised, we're actually told we'll have struggles and trials and grief on this earth. And I had a wee poem written in my Bible from when I was like 14. And I'll just say if I can remember it now, or remember all the words, but it's always helped me, and I think it summarizes what trials and what God has promised us. And it says, God has not promised skies always blue, flower-strewn pathways all our lives through. He has not promised sun without rain, joy without sorrow, peace without pain. But he has promised strength for each day, rest after labour and light for our way, grace for all trials and help from above, unfailing sympathy and undying love.
That's super, Claire. And thank you for sharing that. That's a real challenge for all of us as we listen on, Claire. So thanks for sharing that. David, as you then reflect on what you have walked through along with Claire, and as you reflect even on your own life as well as a teenager who was looking for hope in various situations, as you reflect on your life as a couple, what would you say to folks who are listening on here this evening?
I'd say God's put people in our lives, and if we don't witness to those that are in our lives who are unsaved, what chance do they have? You know, it's our duty to reach people. I mean, not with respect to getting married to these people, obviously, but people need to know the Lord, and we are here to let them know about the Lord. And on that side, we need to have a relationship with God to be able to appropriately witness to people. If we don't have that personal relationship that only comes from reading his word and time spent on our knees in prayer, we are not going to have the tools we need to reach those who need him most. So I would just implore you to build those relationships with God. Be prepared so that when the situations arise, you are able to do what Claire did with me and essentially lead me to the Lord. That's our duty. That's what we're here to do. We're here to make disciples. And yeah, that's what I would say for Christians who are Christians.
And for anyone who is just thinking about Christianity, yeah, or who is thinking, well, that's not really for me, what would you say to them?
For anybody who hasn't made the commitment, look, you've just listened to what Claire's shared with you all here tonight. Look, you don't know how long you have. You don't know that you have a tomorrow. You need to let Christ into your heart. Follow him. You know, make him your mentor. Build that relationship with Christ. You can't get through life on your own. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And, you know, we all need a Savior. We're born in sin. God can't look at us for our sin. But he sent a sacrifice in his son, Jesus, so that we could be saved, that we might be able to spend an eternity with him in heaven. And, you know, don't put it off, because you just don't know.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing. It's been a real joy for all of us as we have listened up and had a small window into your life and how your faith in God has been shown in all areas of your life. So thank you for sharing. So let's have a round of applause for Dave and Claire. Share so well. And Andy's going to come and sing this.